This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to another episode of Just a Tip, an advice podcast that's equally about its tangents as it is about its tips, usually. But today it's a little different because the tangents that we go on are definitely thematic on what we're talking about. I'm your host, Megan Mattoon, and today's episode, I think, is probably the most interesting one to date, mainly because I've never done one with this many guests at one time, and also... I'm recording this on my couch and my microphone is completely broken off of the stand. So I'm kind of holding it like Freddie Mercury the whole time, just so you can have some visual to what's going on here. With me today, I have two of my favorite people and repeat guests of Just a Tip. We have Ross Everett, who is a phlegmatic, Brian McElhaney, who is a melancholic, alongside me, who is a sanguine. So we have all biotypes accounted for, except for a choleric, and if all of this sounds like fictitious Rick and Morty characters, you are in for a treat, because we're talking about biotypes and kind of systemic psychology all wrapped in one with the brilliant mind of Rodrigo Garcia Platas. He is a systemic psychologist and a transformational coach, a teacher of biotype psychology, and we're basically doing a roundtable discussion, asking him a bunch of questions that we've been talking about for at least a few weeks now. I'm not going to say anything else because I think this is also the longest episode. We recorded for like an hour and 45 minutes. So without further ado, enjoy. Okay, I think I want to start with making sure that we know what biotype we are. So if I'm correct, we have three different biotypes on this couch. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
It's why we get along so well, I think.
Is it?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'm
looking at Rodrigo. Category.
Are you going to explain what biotypes are?
No.
Should he explain what they are?
Yeah, please, Rodrigo, take it away for anyone that has not heard of biotypes ever. If you have an easy way of understanding what this is.
Wow. Okay. I need an easy, short answer for this. I think the easiest way to understand it is modern medicine pays attention to diseases and parts of the body. So they get specialized in different parts of the body or different diseases. But before, when we had allopata is like the medicine that we have right now. But before when we had ancient medicines, they actually paid attention to the structures of bodies and genetics so that they could heal people by maintaining their balance. So it wasn't about understanding the disease, but actually understanding the genetic structure of each human being, because that way you know how much they should sleep, what they should eat, what they should avoid, how they relate to other biotypes, what weather is the best for them. So the example that I always give is, for example, thousands of years ago, the doctor of the Chinese emperor wasn't there to heal the emperor when he got sick. He was there so that the emperor would never get sick. Mm. And if the emperor got sick, they would kill him. They will kill that doctor because it means that he didn't understand the genetic structure of that emperor specifically. So biotypes is the different polarities that exist in human genetics that explain who we are and how our bodies work the way they do.
Wow. Why doesn't everyone know about this already?
Oh, because we've been refusing to pay attention to ancient everything for years. Like, we don't want to pay attention to ancient history. We don't want to pay attention to ancient medicine, to ancient technology. We think we're the best, and we think that what we know right now has to be the best. We must be at the pinnacle of human understanding. So we refuse to pay attention to those things, but they're coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed when Ross first told me about biotypes probably 2 weeks ago, I'm so skeptical of this type of stuff, from astrology to anything, which might be a melancholic thing. But then Ross read me like a book, and I was like, whoa, what is this? And then we started talking about it, and I started feeling like I was observing the patterns everywhere once I knew it. And I've talked to other friends about it, and some are like so happy to hear it, and they like jump onto it so quickly. But I've had other friends meet it with such resistance. And some people even get like, they're like, that's actually not okay what you're saying and doing. And, you know, they liken it to like, you know, people used to do this to, you know, create sort of a racist boundaries between people and X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, I'm not saying that didn't happen, but like, there seems to be something clearly going on here that I have like, I've drank the Kool-Aid, my friend. I'm part of your cult.
Oh my God.
It's also like, race has nothing to do with biotype. Like, you could be black and choleric, you could be white and choleric, you could be Asian and choleric. Like, it spans our species more than it does our race.
Right.
It sounds like.
That's really good. Well, we're at a different time and at a difficult time, I guess, because all this PC culture and everything that we're going through racially obviously has people just not willing to open up to many things. And if it sounds like you're classifying people by their race, people are going to jump up immediately and go like, you're being racist. But no, it's there's actually such freedom out of this. When people understand who they are and how their body should look, and they stop comparing themselves to other biotypes that think differently, act differently, they have different structures in every way, there's actually a huge freedom there.
I have noticed that in myself. Like, I have had such a sense of freedom in the last week, just like, not just in my body, but just like the things I'm good at and not good at. There are some things where I've always chased that I'm just now realizing I just don't naturally have. And it's not to say that I can't learn to be balanced and explore that part of me, but it's like, I feel almost okay knowing that like, I don't live from emotion in the same way you do, Ross. And like, that's just sort of, it doesn't mean I'm not emotional and can't access those, but it's like, it comes from a different place and I have to use different tools to get there. That's way more freeing to me than thinking I can do everything, than hitting these limits and being like, why am I not doing this the right way? Like, that to me is way more frustrating.
So will you quickly just go over, just to give a little context to those who have no idea what this is, the four base biotypes and just a little bit of like characteristics of each of them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's four polarities in biotypes. And before I explain that, something that amazes me is when you learn biotypes, if you figure out what a population in a country has the most in their biotype structure, you understand how that country works. And it's really interesting. Now, the four polarities are the following. We have choleric, phlegmatic, sanguine, and melancholic. Now, the first thing we need to tell everybody who's listening to this is, do not Google biotypes. Do not Google it. Why am I saying this? Because what we're going to explain is Unani biotype. So unless you guys speak Urdu and can go online and then look for Urdu information about Unani medicine, then you'll find exactly what we're talking about. But actually, India has been really protective of this information. Now, the four polarities are, again, choleric, which is people that live in their impulse. Like, what moves them is being impulsive, and they hide in anger and they think that everybody's stupid but them, and they are powerful leaders and they're really like hard-headed and they know what they want and they know where they're going. Then there's phlegmatics, which is the absolute opposite, and they go through life experiencing everything through emotion. So they experience life through emotion. Everything has to do with the way they feel. They're this type of people that even when they intellectually know that they're doing something wrong, if it feels nice to do it, they'll just carry on doing it.
Bingo.
And there's like specific products for phlegmatics.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm like, yep. Okay. You just described me. So cool.
Ross is our resident phlegmatic.
I'm the resident phlegmatic for this. Yeah.
Then on the other axis, we have melancholics on one side and sanguines on the other. So sanguines, I'm a sanguine. Sanguines live in action. Everything has to do with the doing. So we don't really pay attention to consequences and what might happen. We just throw ourselves at life and figure out how to do it. Like, for example, when the mic stand breaks and you're like, I'll just put my foot over here. That's the most sanguine thing you could have done. So that's how we understand life. We understand life mechanically. Right. Like, the best example I always give is when we buy an electronic, we do not read the manual.
Yes.
We just start pressing buttons until we figure out how it works.
Totally.
Because we feel like it's part of us. And we hide in being excessive with everything. Like, if we like something, we're going to eat like 100 of them.
Yeah.
If we think something's interesting, if we think someone's interesting, we want to spend a month 24/7 with that human being. We're really intense in like, I like this, I choose it like for the rest of my life until we get bored of it and find something else that's interesting.
Yes.
Will they redesign their house every single month?
Okay, and, Shane. Yes, I got really interested in Paris and my entire balcony is super Parisian now. It's quite, you can tell when I go through different stages of my life based off of what is around my house. So I am the resident sanguine. Me and Rodrigo are the sanguines here. And then yes. Brian is melancholic.
And then we have the melancholics. And melancholics live in their heads. So everything has to do with the way they can reason about it. And they need a lot of information to make choices. That if they're buying a car, they need to see all of the cars. And then they need to see the resale value. And they need to know how much the services cost. And they need to make sure that it's a good idea. And they take so long to make a decision that by the time they're buying the car, a new one came out and they have to start all over again. And then when they actually buy the car, they drive out of the lot. And as soon as they get out of the lot, they go like, man, I think I made a mistake.
Yeah,
I
should have
gone. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Because they're doubting themselves all the time. So they live in their intellect, they live in their head, and they hide in fear because they're thinking of every possibility that could happen. And then they're trying to avoid anything painful in any one of those situations. So for example, if a sanguine goes to a business meeting, the sanguine is just thinking like, I'm going to wear my lucky shirt and I'm going to be like this and I'm going to be passionate and charismatic and they're going to love me. And they don't really think about it. They just get ready like emotionally somehow. But melancholics, their meeting starts like a month before. They're thinking, I'm going to say this. And if they say that, I'm going to answer this. And I'm going to wear that shirt. No, not that shirt. That doesn't project the image that I want to give. Maybe if I wear this one and I act like this. And then nothing ever goes as we plan, obviously. And melancholics are those type of people that win arguments in the shower the next day.
Yeah, I've won a lot of arguments in the shower. You just reminded me of like, I remember one time a few years ago, I was going to ask a girl out and I asked another friend for advice. I was like, is this good to say? And they're like, yeah, run it by me. And I opened up a notebook and I had a whole script written out
of
what I was going to say and what they were going to say. And they just took my notebook and threw it. And they were like, just none of that.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you're right. Yes, yes, of course.
You wrote a script of
what they were going to say back to me. Just, I was like, what? I look back at that. I'm like, that's so stupid.
Well, it's so funny. Wow. I'm reminded now, actually, I have one of my best friends is melancholic and he was like talking to a girl. And he's like, what do I say? And I'm like, and I just rattled something off and he goes, can you write that down?
Oh,
and so like,
yes.
I literally had to write down and he just read it off of a paper.
Okay.
And he's like, it worked. But like, I was like Cyrano de Bergerac, like the phlegmatic giving advice to the melancholic about how to interact emotionally.
Wow. Okay. So
Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to ask that you are predispositioned to be one of these biotypes, but what happens if you feel like you're kind of have a wing of another? Or that you're like a mixture of two. Is that possible?
You can have a little bit of the neighboring ones. That means like the diagram is a circle. And then you have cholerics on the top, phlegmatics at the bottom. That's one axis. And then you have melancholics to the left and sanguines to the right. And that's another axis. You can have a little bit of your neighbor biotypes. So for example, as a sanguine, I could have a little bit of choleric or a little bit of phlegmatic, but I would never have any melancholic because that's actually the opposite. And this
so
has to do with chemistry in the blood. This has to do with certain components in our blood. And that's why our bone structure, the way we gather mass, like the way we gather fat, how big our muscles are, everything is defined by that.
That's so fascinating because when you were describing melancholics, I felt like I had so much of those tendencies. So I guess now my question is, when does it change from like a biotype or your general temperament from your innate biological, I guess, makeup into personality, like, or the stories we tell ourselves, or how do we go from being what we were born as and then changing who we are based off of our environment and our personality?
That's a really good sanguine question. Trying to understand the mechanics of how it works. Yeah. Beautiful. So the way they explain it in Unani medicine is, for example, at the beginning, when you try to talk about temperaments with most people, they reject it because it feels like they're being classified.
Yeah.
But when we talk about animals, we don't have a problem with it. Like, we understand temperaments in animals without a problem. Like, you see a German Shepherd and you know pretty much how they act, even if you don't know that specific dog. Like, if you go hunting, which don't ever, but I went once and I promise never to do it again. But I was there with an expert hunter and we saw a deer. And just by looking at the deer, the hunter told me, oh, that's a whitetail. And they're really nervous. As soon as he hears a gunshot, they're going to run and they jump really fast. And like, he knew how the animal was going to react. Why? Because we actually understand temperament by intuition. Mm. So I promise I will answer the question, but I want to say something else. So for example, even if you don't know about biotypes, when you're looking at a TV show or a movie, and the person who's acting the role looks like the biotype that acts in that way, we love it. It's called egoic harmony. Like, your ego is in harmony because you're feeling authenticity, because that's exactly how someone that looks like that should act. Mm. And then there's sometimes many amazing actors that, because they look so specifically like one biotype and they cast them wrongly in another biotype's role, even if they're amazing actors, you just don't buy it. Like, it's like, I'm not liking this person. I don't think they're such a good actor. And now going back to your question, animals are supposed to be 5% personality and 95% temperament. Mm. So that's why on animals, we don't have a problem saying like, this animal is like this. We intuitively know their temperament. But with human beings, we're like 70% temperament and 30% personality. Now, just by looking at someone, I've been practicing this for years, but Ross has been practicing this for months and he's getting extremely good at it. Woo! Like, he's always sending me pictures going like, this is a phlegmatic, right? And I go like, yes. This is a melancholic. And I go like, yes. Like, he's getting really good at it. But what's interesting is, going back to the whole medical thing, psychology really started with psychoanalysis. Before that, before Freud, all we did was electroshock people in the head if they had problems. Mm-hmm. It was Freud and Jung, the ones who started saying like, what if we talk to them before we like give them shocks in the brain? Which seemed like a good idea.
Yeah.
But then most psychology only wants to deal with personality, and it kind of denies the ancient knowledge of biotypes. And you can only fix a certain percent. But the truth is that personality is unique, and it has to do with life experiences and how you interpreted them and the belief structure that you live in.
Right.
But biotype cannot be changed. And it's inheritance from your parents and your grandparents. And we're actually building an algorithm to start predicting what people will be in their biotype, right, just because of who their grandparents and parents are.
You know, when you talked about casting in TV shows, that's a really interesting point with this, because I agree. There's something that happens when you see someone like very miscast where you're like, oh, yes, this, like, it feels wrong on the inside. And yes, I've even, like, I'm an actor and I've run audition rooms before for my projects. And sometimes people would walk in, and the moment they walk in, you just, you know, you'd have a gut feeling, they'd just be like, no. And they'd do their audition and they would be an incredible actor. They'd be so good. And you'd be like, yeah, you're great. You'll never get this part. It's not like, go home, work on it. It's just like, this just isn't ever going to happen. The same way there are certain roles that you could never believe me in, ever. I will not be a war general. I just can't. I can work out and I can mimic it well, but you'd watch it and you'd be like, something is wrong. Something does not make any sense.
Here's something that's really interesting. If you were a war general, the only way in which people would believe you if something about the story told us that you were placed in that position because of someone you know, or because of your last name. And then people would buy it, because that's the only way in which a melancholic would end up in one of those roles.
Right, right. I was thinking sometimes I think in comedies, sometimes casting opposite types may actually help, because there's something funny about it. Like, maybe that's a place, like if you're doing like a real dramatic, realistic film, it probably won't work. But I think maybe in comedies, there is something funny about being like, oh, that guy's playing something that he's clearly not. You allow it a little bit
more.
Yeah,
there's juxtaposition. If it's like the phlegmatic that's like everyone's afraid of, like that doesn't exist. Like, I don't know. Can people be afraid of phlegmatics? Like, if you're like,
be afraid of anything.
Okay, that's fair.
Dude, I've trained 90,000 people. I've seen it all.
Well, here's an example. We were talking about just going to The Office, and we're talking about the character of Dwight, who you were saying is a choleric.
I think Dwight's right? Choleric.
Do you think Rainn Wilson?
Are you familiar with The American Office, Rodrigo?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you think Rainn Wilson, the actor, is a choleric?
Yes.
You think so? Because I was thinking, what if he was a phlegmatic and the reason we like Dwight as a character is we're not scared of him because it's a comedy.
Oh.
But is Dwight the assistant manager that's assistant to the manager?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know who he is. He's not a choleric.
Yeah. And I think if they cast a choleric, we might just be like, this isn't funny. This is scary.
Yeah.
But because he's...
Whoa. I think he's so phlegmatic he's not melancholic. Is he phlegmatic? Is he a skinny phlegmatic?
He's a phlegmatic fake fire.
Fake fire. Oh, let's talk about that.
So that's why he's able to play the choleric because there's an element of, okay. So you actually have to explain, like I got this real quick because I understand this, but now you have to explain what a phlegmatic fake fire is.
The first thing I need to say is he's perfectly casted because he's a phlegmatic fake fire. I'll explain what that is in a second. But because he's a fake fire, he can act like an aggressive choleric without him seeming dangerous.
Yes. Right.
Like you never buy his threats because he's actually a phlegmatic.
Yeah.
And then it makes it funny. And he's perfect for that role. Then what's a fake fire? It's a way in which we explain when people try to reject their biotype. So most people, especially melancholics, clerics, and sanguine, they mostly create personalities that are in service to their biotype. So for example, I'm a sanguine. That means I live in doing, in action, that everything has to do with how I mechanically do stuff and how I relate to other people. So then it would be extremely common that my personality became a funny person or a really good host or someone who loves cooking for others because that would be in service to my biotype. But if I rejected my biotype, I would be trying to hide it. And that's what happens with phlegmatic fake fires. They're the most emotional biotype. And I always tell them that they're the uncertified psychologists of the world because everybody opens up to them. Everybody shares their stories with them. Everybody asks advice of them, even if they don't want to. Yeah, and when I get phlegmatics in the room and I start explaining this, they go like, yeah, sometimes I hate when people speak to me in public. And if I sit in a bus, the person beside me starts telling me their life story. And I go like, yeah, because you're a phlegmatic and people love telling their stories to phlegmatics because it feels like you understand me and that you care about me even if you don't,
right?
Because you're so emotional. Now, the thing is, many people that are phlegmatics very young start feeling like being so emotional is dangerous, makes them seem weak and makes other people be able to take advantage of them. And then we call them fake fire because in Unani medicine, every biotype is defined by an element. So cholerics are fire, phlegmatics are water, sanguines are earth, and melancholics are air. And we call them fake fire because they're trying to avoid their emotions and they're trying to act as a choleric, angry man. So they speak like they're that powerful, angry general that could be a general, as we were talking before. But it's only a personality mask, but you can feel how emotional they are underneath. So you never really buy into their threats. They look funny when they do it.
Right. So I've heard phlegmatic fake fire a lot, but what is like a melancholic fake fire or a sanguine fake fire?
I'd be a fake earth.
Oh, I see. And like, right? A fake water. Does that exist?
No.
Oh.
Because melancholics, cholerics, and sanguines, as I started explaining, never deny their origin. They love it.
Oh, that makes sense.
We don't make fun of people for being intelligent or for being mechanically savvy about life or for being powerful.
Right.
But we do make fun of people for being too emotional.
Do you see that a lot with like an American men? Because I feel like emotions are like kind of told to, you're sort of told to repress them as a guy in our country. Do you see phlegmatic men who have this fake fire thing, or women? Is it something that happens with our country across the globe? Is that just sort of a thing that's how our world operates right now?
I mean, obviously where you can see more fake fires is wherever you have more phlegmatics,
mm-hmm.
Like in Mexico. Mexico is like probably 70% phlegmatics, both men and women. In the States, I believe probably like 50% of the men in the States or 40% are cholerics. And by the way, there are no choleric women. There's only choleric men.
Why is that?
And it has to do, It has to do with some components in the blood. They call it safra. It's a component of sulfur, actually. That's why choleric men get so red and they get angry really fast and their skin turns reddish and they explode in anger. It's actually because of something they have in their bloodstream. And if women had that, they wouldn't be fertile. They right. couldn't have children.
Wow. So for everyone listening, because you have to look at someone and see the fat yes. deposits and bone structure. So for everyone listening that wants to know what their biotype is without being read by you, how could they kind of place themselves kind of like a Harry Potter sorting hat of which house they're in based off of what they look like?
Melancholic well, Hufflepuff over here.
Well, they should go do your workshop and they'll get the whole breakdown.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're doing a virtual workshop, right?
Yes, it's on the 18th, if I'm not mistaken.
July.
Is it?
July, yeah. July 18th.
Yes, yeah. July 18th. 18th and 19th, because it's a 2-day seminar.
And that's open to anybody?
Yeah, anybody who wants to learn about themselves. I always tell them this, like, learning about biotypes is going to give you freedom about who you are, what your strengths are, and it's going to allow you to stop judging yourself and comparing yourself to others. But then at the same time, mastering biotypes is a superpower. And you guys have experienced it with me. Like, I can just look at people and go, like, you're like this, like this, like this. And that's what you felt with Ross, for example, when he read you like a book. Because you can literally just see someone's body and know who they are. Like, at least 70% of who they are. You can't guess about their personality, but you can guess about their biotype. And we're going to do an introductory workshop to it. It's a digital workshop, so it doesn't matter where you live. You can register. And it's going to be on July 18th and 19th. And it's going to be all the information about how their body structures work, how people react to it, how they interact with each other, what biotypes are good together, what biotypes are explosive together, and you should never have in the same room. things like that, especially like in different positions, and each job needs a different biotype sometimes. And then you'll start practicing it. But if you're in sales, if you manage a group of people, a team of human beings, and you want to create powerful teams, or you want to know how to speak to people because you want to sell them something specific, it's a superpower.
Right.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Oh, it's so good to like, well, he just talked about how a melancholic would buy a car, right?
Totally.
So if you're a car salesperson, you need to be like, okay, here's all of the specs on all of the different models and our competitors and comparisons and all that stuff like that. Right. And they'll be like, oh, data, you know, like, it'll be like,
it's like their kink.
Yeah. But actually, so something came up. I'm going to put you guys because we FaceTimed with Rodrigo a while ago. Yes. And it was the most comedically beautiful thing.
Yeah, tell the story.
Because so we were together, and you know, your audience knows that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we talked about it on the last podcast Brian was on. We talked about the most embarrassing story in the magician. Yes,
which that's is right. My favorite.
This is gonna
story.
Get interesting. Yeah.
So Rodrigo was like, "Oh, like you guys were together," and he goes, "I could tell you why you broke up." And they're like, "Why?"
Well, he said,
and
then, first, I'll tell you why you guys fell for each other.
Oh yeah,
and he told us, and it was. I mean, I really resonated with it. I don't know if you did, but I was like, too. "Holy shit!"
So, Rodrigo, just for the audience, why would these two specifically these two fall for each other just by looking?
It was
at
funny
them?
Because I didn't know that you guys had been together. So I just told you like, "Oh, you guys would make." make a couple like fun, falling in love like that because you're opposites. One of you is a sanguine, the other one's a melancholic. And then what happens with that is sanguines fall for melancholics because we look at them and they start speaking and they tell us about this like deep knowledge about life and philosophy and how they understand the world. And we just fall for it like, wow, this human being can see parts of life that I didn't know existed. And they pay attention to things I never pay attention to. This is brilliant. And then the melancholic that lives in their head is paying attention to a sanguine going like, wow, they're so out there and they're extroverts and they're just willing to take chances and they have a podcast and they have a following and people love what they do because they're doing it amazingly. And if I had someone like that, I would take risks. If I had someone like that, I would do stuff that I had never done before. And then they fall for each other. But for those same reasons, they split up after a while.
So what you can't see is Megan nodding when he's talking about the sanguine, yeah, and Brian nodding when he's talking about the melancholic. So Rodrigo gives them this breakdown and they go, wow, yeah. And then Rodrigo goes, well, I could tell you why you broke up. And then like both of them went, why? And they like leaned in and then Rodrigo's phone drops the call.
Like three times. It was like a hat trick. Yeah.
So now I think like we've got good internet service. We're connected. Would you guys like to know the answer to that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to you, Megan. It's your podcast. Yeah,
I will say before we hear it that I've seen a couple of your lives, Rodrigo, and I like when you talk about when you work with couples and it's like, you when they ask like, are we doomed, are we gonna make it, you're like, only you can know that because you can decide, yeah, what to do, but I can tell you how to make it, which I think, exactly, is always so great because yeah, it's up to them to do whatever they want in order to make it float or fail, but inherently this is the ingredient. You can just make the cake with what you have. So I was just,
yeah
I like that. I like that. With that being said, let us know.
I mean, I really enjoy it. I enjoy doing it, but I'm using many things when I do that. Like people get really excited when I just, by looking at them, tell them about their biotype. But then I love when it's couples because I've been working with people for the past 15 years and I know, I kind of understand the patterns and the dynamics of relationships. So what I tell them is how they could respect each other's strength to make it work.
Yes.
That's what I explain. Because most people, when someone I love stops paying attention to my strength, then I start believing that it must not be important.
Mm. Right.
And then, yeah, we feel stepped on, mm-hmm, and used in a way. So for example, to make it work between, like, do you want me to talk about that?
Well, yeah. So what do you think, yeah, happened? Why do we slip away?
And how we could have made it work, or any sanguine and melancholic that might be listening.
Okay.
Oh no.
Yeah.
We have a big exhale.
I love it. I love it. He's like, it's like the doctor putting on a latex.
Let me get ready for this.
Like, where, does this couch have a seatbelt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like blushing already.
So a lot of it has to do with the positive masks that you both wear. It doesn't actually have to do with your biotype that much. And for you to understand this, when we talk about masks, most people believe that masks are negative. Like, he's always angry. He's always defending himself. That's a negative mask. We can all see that. But actually, there's a way more dangerous mask. And in psychology, they're called egosyntonic masks because they make us look good. They, mm-hmm, make us get approval from other people. And in both of your cases, what made it not work is the promise of your positive mask that you didn't fulfill, that never came true. And for example, to start with you, Megan, your positive mask is like extremely charismatic and out there, like you're willing to do everything. And that's how you present yourself socially and obviously through social media, I guess. And that makes you extremely attractive to people. But then when that's a positive mask, that means that there's a sort of darkness underneath, a fear of what people might think and fear of rejection, which is something that many sanguines have. I have it too. And if we don't deal with it, we fall in love with a positive mask. And then whoever falls in love with you falls in love with that persona. And then after a while, the intimacy of the relationship actually starts revealing many places inside of you that need certain nurturing and that don't want to be the one speaking all the time and the one being right all the time, and that actually needs to be cared for in a way you weren't cared for as a kid, which is really obvious. That's why I said what I said last time I sent the message. And we gotta say what that message was.
Wait, let's keep going. I'm rolling.
We have so many bifurcating
this
thoughts.
This is so interesting. All right.
Absolutely.
No, yes.
A resounding yes in every single way. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Like in order to say that, I'm using biotypes, but I'm also using systemic psychology, which is I know how the patterns from coming from a household with certain elements look like, and you follow them to the T. So that's why I sent a message saying, like, I really like her. She's a fun sanguine. Not a lot of mother or father, though.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. So when it's no mom, no dad, that what does that exactly mean? In systemic
psychology.
Mom is
inner confidence and dad is outer confidence. Mm. And that's why we have a saying in Mexico that has become really fashionable and I hate it. And it's when women are abandoned by the husband, and quotes when I say abandoned, because it's a very Latin thing. And when they're abandoned, they start saying things like, I'm going to be mother and father at the same time. And I laugh about it because you can't.
Right.
You can't. You can't build what the father figure creates. And you can't artificially build what the mother figure creates. And then the easier way to explain it is, mom loves me by definition, just because I exist. I grew up inside of her. And then when I was born, I could feel her love. So even it doesn't matter who my mom was. It's not about blaming your parents. In fact, you can meet siblings, even twins that come from the same mother and the same father, and they have very different interpretations of who their parents were. Like if you ask me and then you ask my sister, it sounds like we come from different countries. Forget about different families, because we have such a different interpretation of our parents. But then when I allow my mother's actions to be interpreted as love for me, then my inner confidence is built. I start feeling confident about who I am, how much I'm worth, my beauty, my ability to like attract people towards me. So when people feel confident, worthy, smart, and all of that, that's all mom. That's all mom. So for example, I always give this example. If you walk into a Starbucks and you see this guy and he's sitting there and he obviously hasn't had a shower in a week and he's wearing the same t-shirt, but he doesn't give a shit what people think about him. He's wearing his headphones. He's on his computer and he's sitting there like he's worth $1 million. Like if you walk up to that guy, all you need to say is something like, mommy loved you, didn't she? And he's going to go like, yeah, because that's mama's little boy. That's exactly how a guy with no father and a lot of mother looks like.
Wow.
And then the father figure becomes outer confidence. In fact, you've been through one of my trainings, so you probably remember that I can look at people and tell them like, come on, start speaking about your mom, because I know that's the problem. I know we need to talk about that.
Right.
And with father, it's about my doing. So it's not about who I am, but what I do.
Yes.
Because dad doesn't love me just because I exist. Mm. I need to earn his love. Mm. So I earn it by saying his name, holding his hand, chasing him everywhere, watching the game with him, asking him to give me a sip of his beer, something stupid like that. My dad starts validating my actions. And I feel like he loves me because of what I do. I'm rooting for the same team that he's rooting for. So I want to be like him. And then when I feel like my dad's actions came from love, then I start feeling that what I do is good enough and what I do is valuable. And I start believing that I will succeed because what I do is really good. And then it's really interesting because when people start describing themselves with words like empty, confused, broken, I feel a void inside of me, mommy issues right away. When people start saying things like, I'm a failure, I can't do it, I'll no matter how much I try, I will never succeed, people will never like me, tell me about dad.
Yeah.
That's all dad issues.
What? How do you fix that if someone has no mom or only mom or no mom, no dad? Like, how do you even start to do that?
MITT.
Asking for a friend.
Exactly. Go to MITT.
Well, I mean, like, there are trainings all over for that kind of stuff. And, like, I mean, like, we started to do the work. Like, so can I say that we met?
Yeah.
So Megan and I connected in one of these trainings. Yeah. Actually, we both, like, Rodrigo was our trainer in the basic at MITT. Some of those exercises, like, shine the light on it. And I don't know about you, but I started to feel, like, new awarenesses of, like, oh, my God, this is how it's been running my life. I started to have conversations with, like, my family. Once I got the awarenesses through the, you know, the exercises and the trainings, I would go and I'd share my new awarenesses, and also, like, a sense of freedom, like a shift in my subconscious started to happen.
What did your parents say, though? Because I feel like if I were to do the same thing, they would be very against me talking about it.
But it doesn't matter. Like, that's the thing, is, like, it's your life. And it's about, like, going there and, like, you're like, okay, like, I'm going to have a hard conversation with my mom. Like, the big one for me with my mom was, my thing was about masculinity. And, like, we had something happen in the basic training where a woman came up on stage and literally took the microphone away from me. And I just sat there and took it. And Rodrigo was like, Ross, like, we're waiting for you to cut her off. Yeah. And so I had this big thing and I realized, like, I've repressed anything to me that would seem like an aggressive, hostile asshole. Anything. And I actually had a conversation with my mom of, like, I get what you were trying to do, because my mom really nurtured the gentle, loving side of me. And if I was ever aggressive or assertive, I felt like there was punishment there. And I told her, I was like, I'm going into this side of me. You might not like the way this looks, but it's important to me. So just in having that conversation, and, like, you know, she could have gone, like, well, I don't think that's the right thing to do. And what I would have said is, like, Mom, your importance, your opinion is important to me, but this is my life. I get one shot at this, and I've been stopping here so many times. I'm just done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's my choice. It's my life. So it's like, you get to stand up to your parents and the belief systems that they've installed in you, and also understanding that they've installed it in you. Or I guess it'll come from me. I understood that they put that there out of love. They put it there out of protection. My mom did not like any anger or hostility because it hurt her so much growing up. And one of the things I got an awareness around that I got to tell her is, like, that energy that hurt you could also be used to protect you.
Right.
And so by beating it out of me, not beating it physically, but by, like, weaning it out of me, she wasn't really doing me any favors as a man. It's hard to learn to be a man from a woman, straight up. Like, yeah. That was, like, the biggest thing that I took away. And also one of the reasons why when I first saw Rodrigo, I was like, that's the type of man I want to be, because he wasn't angry at all. He's a sanguine up on that stage, laughing, having fun. He wasn't angry, but there was nobody that could push him around.
Totally.
And I was like, that's what it looks like. And it was the first time I got to see what it could look like.
Yeah.
So just in having that, was really important. And it gave me, like, I'm like, okay, like, there's something outside of what I know that this could look like. That it can be. And I actually felt like I was, like, going on an adventure. I'm like, I don't know what this looks like, but I'm going to find out.
Right.
Yeah. And here's the truth of the matter is, like, you can't lose your mother's love. You're built into her oxytocin. Like you're programmed into her brain.
Literally.
Yeah. So it's like, it might feel weird for, and it might feel scary, but it's like, surround yourself with people, go to these trainings, keep doing the work, keep looking at it. I mean, like, I got
looking
to,
for teachers.
What?
Keep looking for teachers.
Yeah.
Like, keep looking for people that will give you something valuable in life.
And one of the most beautiful things I saw is, like, Rodrigo did a man up training. It was only men. And, like, some of the things that happened in that training, which I won't talk about because it was other people's experiences, but it was like this, like, holy fuck, like, just watching healing happen in front of our eyes. And that's one of my favorite things about your Instagram lives that you do, is, like, you don't necessarily have to go to a full training, but just to watch someone transform.
It's cool.
In front of your eyes. And I'm hoping you'll do more of the Instagram lives. And actually, instead of just reading people's bio types, like, you'll take them on like you do in the training. Yes. I know it's a bigger ass, but they look physically different afterwards.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And it's wild. So I'm going to take this. I'm just going to plug, like, if you want to do, like, the uncovering stuff, go to MITtraining.com, and they have discoveries and basics and whatnot. And then Rodrigo has the biotype stuff up on his Instagram and the link there. So it's like, there's unlimited resources to both work with Rodrigo on whatever facet that you're looking to do in your life. It's like, there's like a menu that they can order off of, you know?
Literally.
Yeah.
And they can follow me at RGP Development because now I have my Instagram in English.
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah. People should know that, like, his, you're based in Mexico. I'd say for like a large percentage of your career, you were only teaching in Spanish, and it's only within the past like 7 or so years. How long have you been doing trainings in English?
Like 10 years, but I only did like 1 or 2 a year because I didn't have any time to go up there.
Yeah. So it's like now that
I was training in
virtual.
Spain and in Mexico and in South America, I was running 3 transformational centers in Mexico.
Oh my goodness.
It's the gift of COVID, honestly. It's not Rodrigo, Rodrigo in English.
Yeah. The one. Yeah, we have to go back to you.
May I go back to my egoic mask?
Brian has been like dying on the corner.
I need to know. I need to figure
out. We've also seen a transformation of him, but just like decrepitly going into himself. We need to have the answer or else Brian won't be able to live.
Well, how did you feel about your answer?
I mean, well, absolutely right. I don't know your answer yet, but your answer will also affect
well,
me.
Well, I responded to what he said about you. I mean, I don't want to get too personal, but like that was a very... You hit the nail on the head in a way I hadn't really thought about before.
Yeah, because I was putting this bliss mask on, saying like, oh, everything is good.
I was just sort of like, well, this girl's, she's got it together so much. She's so emotionally, and like, you just like did shit and I couldn't get out of bed in the morning and you're just go, go, go. But then there'd be a vulnerable side of you that would pop out and I wouldn't know if you needed emotion or not. Like, it was one of those things where I'm does she need nobody or like someone who like needs to cradle her? It's like, I didn't know. It seemed like I could see both.
Oh, I can answer that question.
Yes, please do, because I felt like nothing happened and I was like, why is he not here for me?
Yeah, and I was like, she doesn't want me. I wasn't getting what I thought were the cues.
It's such a melancholic response of like, she's going to like do this calculated thing that means give
me
love.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. You're like waiting for the signals and she's like, feel with your heart. And you're like, I'm feeling with my head and I can't feel anything.
Yeah, so.
It's how do I feel with my heart? Give me the manual and I promise I'll try. Yeah. That's the answer.
Tell me the rules
and
I'll follow them. Yeah. Yeah, what's the egoic mask that a melancholic would wear, or if that is applicable?
No. We're getting specific. I want you to hit his nail right on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no specific one. Because this is personality,
right.
It has nothing to do with your biotype. But if you understand the biotype, you start understanding the needs that this person might be trying to cover up. So in your case specifically, it's about the way you act is not really melancholic. Your head is 100% melancholic. What happens inside of you is 100% melancholic. But the way you act is like you're completely balanced. Like you're willing to throw yourself at things and you're a risk taker and you can be funny on the spot. And that's your mask. And most of us build a career around our positive mask, our bliss mask.
I did.
Most of us do. Same. And that's dangerous. And I'll explain that in a minute. But yours has to do with, no, I'm fine. Nothing's broken in here. Oh, you don't need to ask about anything. Let's talk about you. This is interesting. Let's talk about someone else and not me. And then that makes you cover up a bunch of emotional things that you're carrying around that you can't think through. And you don't have the tools like physically in your biotype to deal with them. But then the way you fell in love with each other is not only perfect in your biotype, but also perfect in your mask, which is the second level of falling in love, Ross, that I always teach about. And that second level is you must have been perfect for each other when you met each other. He seemed to be that completely balanced human being that you needed. And for him, she seemed a really low maintenance girl that was just ready for everything and was going to stand beside you the whole time. But it's not true. Those were just your positive masks. Yeah. What was actually happening inside of her was, when is he going to figure out what I need without me saying it? When is he going to break through this wall and actually protect me in things that I don't know how to protect myself and I don't even know how to ask for? And then what started happening in him was, but I thought I was enough and I thought you really liked this and I thought you were in love with this mask and this whole way of being. And now you're not telling me what's wrong and you're not explaining what I need to do and I need to guess it, but I'm a melancholic, so I can't guess this. So I'll try everything and just think about it forever, but I won't tell you what's actually happening inside of me. Because even though you must have spoken about what was happening inside of her when you broke up, actually he was way more hurt than you.
Yeah, I was pretty demolished.
Both Brian and Megan are nodding. In the affirmative.
like a sports commentator?
Well, I mean, like, there's yeah, I mean, it's an auditory medium, but there's, like, so much going on right here.
It's palpable.
It's crazy. Well, I just remember, I just was so confused. It was the most confused I'd ever been a breakup. Yeah.
I couldn't believe you were confused, because I was like, here it all is. But it wasn't like that.
To me, it was just sort of like, you were done, and then it was like, you were gone. And I was like, what? Like, we're not even emotionally, like, the tug of war didn't seem to be there. It was just sort of like, and I didn't know what had happened or why all of a sudden it was like one day it felt like it was over.
You know what I think?
Oh, I can explain that too.
Please
actually.
Do.
Sorry.
Please do.
What I felt. And obviously there's a lot more going on.
Please do.
How do you say luto in English? Like mourning? Like when you're mourning for something?
You're in mourning.
M-O-U grief. R-N-I-N-G, like sad grief.
Exactly. Like grief. There you go. Grief works. So, in 99% of breakups, what happens is horrible for both human beings, but it happens like this. Someone has, we all have a grief for breaking up, but the person who's dealing with the grief at the beginning is going through the grief within the relationship. And then their grief stops when the relationship ends, because they've been grieving and feeling pain and not understanding and trying stuff and it doesn't work. And the other person can't see their grief. And then when they break up, they finally feel free.
Wow.
But then for the other person, the grief starts right there.
Wow.
Because they weren't feeling the pain within the relationship. They start feeling it outside their relationship.
Whoa. Whoa.
So it's not that the other person's not feeling the pain. They just feel it on the other side of the breakup.
Wow.
Full body chills.
Yeah, that
like,
was. I
are
feel
you looking
like,
at my arms?
No, I'm looking within. I'm like, oh, man.
So it was painful to date me, is what I'm hearing.
Of course you turned it into that. Of course you just turned it into that. That's such a guilty, melancholic thing to do. I was actually giving you points in this. I was saying he was way more broken than you, because you guys broke up because of her issues, because you, my friend, never put your issues on the table.
That's very true. Yeah. I'm really good at talking to people about their issues.
Exactly. Let's talk about you. I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely my mask in a big way. I mean, when you met me, I mean, a lot of people say this. They're like, look at you. You're so like extroverted and fun and let's go on adventures. And I am to an extent, but part of me is like, oof, you don't know how much energy that takes. Cause it's like, I do enjoy being that person, but like, you know, the me that is just me alone sometimes is stifled by inaction and fear. Like you said,
do you want to know where that comes from?
Yeah. Like, why do we pick our bliss masks?
Well, no, his specifically, because I know a little bit about you, but,
The
question is, the question is, at what point in your life did you decide that being that version of yourself was actually saving you or your family?
Are we talking about my family relationships?
Well, that's where the bliss mask, I mean, and Rodrigo, feel free to jump in and correct me when I'm wrong, but the bliss mask stems from like there was something going wrong in the world of little Brian, and you jumped in and made a joke, or you jumped in and whatever it was. But in that moment that you solved the problem by being a certain way, your bliss mask was formed.
I mean, I can take a big guess what it is.
Am I right on this, Rodrigo?
100%.
Okay.
I mean, you want to go into my backstory? Are we here?
I don't know. Do you?
Well, here's what I think.
Megan, what do you think?
I'm here. I'm having a great time.
Okay.
If I were to just self-analyze, I had really great parents. I do still have great parents. They're very, very loving, and they're very present in my life. I have one sibling who's older than me, and she has cerebral palsy, which is... I mean, it's fascinating, because only when I was adult was I like, oh my God, I bet that shaped me as a person, didn't it? I never even thought about that when I was younger.
Right.
And she's,
of course it did.
And we're very lucky, because she's extremely happy and like very low maintenance. I mean, when I say low maintenance, we need a caregiver 24/7 and she needs help literally doing everything. But I developed this sense of perfectionism when I was younger. And I think it came from the idea of like, well, they have two kids and one can't do so many things. So I got to be one that can do
all the things.
I got to be perfect. I have to, or else, you know, I was going to let them down or something. They never said that ever, but I think that it must be part of it. It must be a part of the soup.
You're only looking at the bright side of it, but it's 100% right.
Yes.
But you're not facing the painful side of it, which is something to, it sounds a little bit more like there's already someone that needs all the attention in this house and I cannot be another problem.
Yes, yes.
Like I cannot bring my issues to the table with them. Like I need to figure it out on my own because it's just selfish to my sister and my parents.
Yes, yes. And when I ever see anyone else kind of speaking out about their own thing, I had this innate thing where I'm like, stop complaining. Stop complaining. Like I don't want people to complain because it's like, I know that I shouldn't is my whole thing. And of course I need to, but it's like, I have this thing where I need to always say like, I'm good when I'm not. And I think that's,
I have something really important to say. I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry,
please,
for interrupting.
Please, please.
This is why you always act like a giver in relationships, which makes you extremely fun to be around, which makes it extremely easy to connect with you at a certain level. At the beginning, that's beautiful. Mm. At the beginning, anyone can fall in love with that, even if it's a romantic or a bromance relationship. Like anyone would fall in love with that. Mm. But when intimacy starts, and by intimacy, I obviously don't mean just sex. By intimacy, I mean like I want to know the core of who you are. When it starts getting intimate, when you don't put that on the table, then people can use the fact that you're not opening up to think that it's about them. Mm-hmm. Like I must be doing something wrong because he's not giving in. He's not surrendering. He's not putting everything on the table. And they have no idea that you're actually being like that to protect your sister and your parents.
Oh my God. I'm about to start crying.
Yeah. Cry, dude.
That's crazy. Finally. Yeah, I mean, I've always, you know, people say jack of all trades, master of none with like jobs. I've always felt like I have, everyone's my friend. Everyone. I like make sure of it. But like in terms of like specific deep relationships, obviously I have best friends, but it's like, I am like such a social butterfly in the sense where it's like drinks with you, then you. And I want everyone to like know me on a very like, you know, base level. But I think you're right. Like intimacy is a thing where there's a certain boundary in which I kind of close up and it's made a lot of people very upset in my life, especially when it comes to dating.
We have a saying in Spanish in Mexico to explain how someone like you acts, and you're not going to love it, but I think it's good for you.
I need to hear it.
We say arroz de todos los moles, which means this rice fits with every sauce. Uh-huh. But it means that it fits perfectly with every sauce because it doesn't really taste like anything on its own.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I feel that.
Sorry.
Am I stuck being a bland piece of rice? How do you break out of that?
Well, you kind of are already. Just like the authenticity that you're showing in this conversation is wall breaking. It's beautiful.
It's something I've
been, I can really acknowledge you for that.
Thanks, man. I've been working on it a lot. I have a one man show I did this year, and it was like my whole thing was like, all right, I've been doing comedy and, you know, which I love, but there's always a wall to sketch comedy and everything. And I wanted to do stuff on stage where I said some shit that scared me and just sort of like showed my ugly side. And I didn't even know if the show was good. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done as an artist. And I don't know if everyone loved it, but it felt, I was like always shaking the next day after a show. Cause I was saying things I never really.
Like a vulnerability hangover.
Yeah. It was very much that every single time.
Oh really?
Vulnerability. Oh yeah. There's a whole big thing about vulnerability hangovers.
Oh yes.
I've never heard of that. Yes.
Yeah. It's like when you like, I guess like you let down these things that you've been hiding for so long. It's like, what's his name? Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye talked about it. Like, when he came out as HIV positive, it's like this big, like, I just showed this big secret that I've been hiding for so long. And afterwards, it's like almost like a detox.
Yeah, it's like your equilibrium is off because you've been used to holding this for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And when you let it go, you're like, oh, weird.
And there's also another thought, which we don't have to go too deep into this, but the idea of like disease, like in the body, the stress hormones that we keep, it's actually like dis-ease. The way in which we handle ourselves emotionally shows up in our body biologically and physiologically. So there is like a possibility that there is a genuine detox happening when you like release this thing, because there's a sense of freedom. So any toxins that you were holding in your body are just kind of like, cool, we're releasing now too. So you physically feel ill.
Right.
Well, actually in Unani medicine, what they say is there's no such thing as disease. There's only unbalance. Mm. When you stop paying attention to your true needs, given who you are, then you get sick because you're unbalanced.
Wow.
That makes sense
to me. I love
that. This is the best.
That's romantic. Yeah. Oh my God.
It is. And there's one other thing I want to say about authenticity and vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I know that Megan and Ross have seen this, and you're actually going through it, Brian, right now. But people are really afraid of being authentic and vulnerable because we convince ourselves when we're very young that being that authentic puts you in a dangerous place. But only when people go there can we actually relate to them.
Yes.
And love them and protect them.
Mm.
And in systemic psychology, there's a saying, and this is how we closed the podcast that we did together, Russ. But in systemic psychology, Bert Hellinger used to say, human beings can only love things that are imperfect because perfect has never been real and real has never been perfect.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, wow. I remember when you said that in basic. We weren't supposed to take notes, but I wrote it down. I was like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And the last thing I wanted to say is like true power actually comes from vulnerability and authenticity. The most powerful people we know and the people that we respect the most is because how authentic and vulnerable they are. That's where true power comes from. But imagine this contradiction, this paradox that we live in, because everything in my ego, everything in my mind is telling me that if I drop my mask and become authentic and vulnerable, the world will destroy me. That's my worst part. Don't ever show that. Your strength comes from your mask and just posing as who you're pretending to be. And when you actually drop it, you realize that that's not weakness, but it's freedom. And that's where true strength comes from.
All three mic drops.
Yeah. Oh, dude, you're so good. It's true. Great.
I feel like when people, me included, but like when I'm not being authentic or acting aligned and when other people aren't, it almost feels like I can't look them in the eye. It feels like there's a veil and it just feels like, get this gunk out and tell me what's actually going on.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Yes.
I'm offended because phlegmatics don't get angry. We get offended.
Exactly.
But it's true.
Good
I do feel offended. I'm like, what? Am I not fucking good enough for you to let your guard down and like be real with me?
Yeah.
It's like I've noticed like my relationships shift over the years based off of like Brian and I connected pretty immediately, but we got like real with each other really quick. And I don't know why. Maybe you're just willing to go there, or maybe it was because the first thing that I said to you was just like, I fucking love your show.
Yeah, give me a compliment.
I think anyone's ego would be like, I love you after that.
A lot of my besties are phlegmatics. Maybe it's just like that emotional thing
most
you have.
Photos you send me are of phlegmatics usually start by hating their bio type, myself included.
Yes.
But then I'm like, I think I'm the best bio type. And I know that you Bragger. Think you're the sanguines are the best bio type, and I'm phlegmatic enough to let you think that. And but like, I just feel like I feel like I can be with people except for cholerics. I don't know. Like, I want to ask you questions about cholerics and their role and where they get to go, because like literally we've got the melancholic, the sanguine, the phlegmatic sitting here on this couch together.
Yeah. Like, and why isn't there a choleric here?
And we've kind of all said along the lines of like, I'm not really a big fan of cholerics, you know, like,
because a choleric wouldn't sit down with us to have this conversation.
Yeah.
He would just judge us and completely dismiss everything we're saying as wishy-washy bullshit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. That's so fascinating.
I know you guys have like a ton of questions that you've like cooked up for Rodrigo. I want to make sure that we have time. Did you even have them anymore?
I think this is the next iteration of him. He's reincarnated.
It's a small vulnerability hangover. Like, my body like shook when I spoke about myself, and now I'm just sort of like kind of easing back into me.
Yeah.
And I didn't even say that much, and it did that.
It was real. Like, you look a little different.
It was, yeah.
You do look different.
Like, there's like a new kindness in your eyes. Like, there's do you see it? Well, his mask just went back on, but no, it's down.
Okay, like, sure. If you say so.
Yeah.
Wow. Can you destroy bliss masks, or is that a bad idea?
Sledgehammer. Oh, please do. They kill you.
Really?
They're the worst. Oh yeah. Like, negative masks destroy relationships, but positive masks destroy lives.
Wow.
Oh yes. By far. They're the worst. Like, I'm concerned about a bunch of people that I see wearing, like, most people have, I mean, everybody has a bliss mask, a positive mask, an ego syntonic mask. But most of us don't have positive masks that are so successful that they will kill us.
Hmm.
But the problem is, I always give this example, which is, I think we've all felt this. Sometimes you're driving towards a party that someone invited you to, or just a dinner party with a few friends. And sometimes you're driving there and you're thinking, I don't know if I want to go because I know exactly what they're expecting of me. And I don't feel like putting on that act tonight. That's when you're getting tired of your positive mask.
Yeah.
And I think we can all relate to that.
Yep.
Now, because they're all expecting me to be extremely serviceful to them or really funny or really wise or really whatever. And the problem is if we all feel that anxiety when we're going towards that party, imagine if you were driving towards a stadium of people that paid to see your positive mask.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Imagine the size of that anxiety. That's why when really famous people that became famous really young because of their positive mask, they all start saying the very similar things. They all start saying things like, people don't really know me. If they knew who I was, they would never love me. I really don't have a true friend. Everybody loves me just because of my act. If they saw who I am, they would all reject me. And they all start saying that, and many of them kill themselves.
Right.
So wait, I have a question for you. If you could like be like, I want to sit down for an hour with so-and-so and I can change their life. Who do you think like a celebrity that you see in our culture?
Oh, I have it. I've been thinking about it for years. Justin Bieber. 100%.
Really?
He's
following the pattern to a T.
What's his biotype?
Melancholic.
I think he's a phlegmatic.
Oh.
What? No. Look at his body in those Calvin Klein ads.
Yeah, look how many years it took him to build up a little muscle.
Really? You think he's a that is like a skinny phlegmatic.
Yeah.
And he's with a melancholic because Hailey Bieber is melancholic, right?
Is she? I don't know who that is.
That's his.
She's a tall supermodel looking person, and that would be generally melancholic, right? The lengthier.
Usually top models are melancholics, all of them. The bodies that used to be fashionable like 50 years ago and for thousands of years before that was the sanguine men and phlegmatic women.
Right.
Those were the fashionable bodies because sanguine men were like this Hollywood star from the 50s.
I'm holding up a photo of Justin Bieber.
But can, like, I know he looks extremely buff there, but can you see that he has like a waistline?
So if you have
and melancholics don't have that.
So my body could theoretically look like this.
If you had started working out and dieting when you were like 17.
Oh, shit. I mean, I did start, I just stopped.
And that's a really good picture of him. I've seen so many pictures of him where he only looks like skinny. And not really ripped.
Yeah.
Right.
I think he's a phlegmatic, which makes it harder.
He'd be a fake fire.
Yeah.
I do have a question.
Because he acts like a choleric.
He does.
He gets really mad at his fans. He punched a fan in Spain.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, he punched this gay guy that was trying to get close to him. Not to kiss him or anything, but he punched him in the face.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't think that's him. Like, I think he's reacting to everything that's happening around him and he doesn't understand.
Do either of you know Justin Bieber? Can we get him an hour with Rodrigo?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I don't know Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
What's your question?
Oh, dude, I would give him 2 hours for free.
My question is, are there any biotypes that do romantically work well paired together? Kind of the reason I ask is, you say we're sort of attracted to our opposite types, but if there are no choleric women, what about phlegmatic men like
Ross? Thank you. Yeah, I've actually had this question.
Where's he supposed to go?
Where do I go?
Are there any, because I know melancholics together don't make any sense, and that makes perfect sense to me. I have a lot of melancholic friends. I've never been attracted to any of them. I know how our brains would just not, we would just sort
I
of,
know.
I think my body has just told me don't ever go there. Like I'm very clear that wouldn't make any sense.
That's a wise body, my friend, because relationships between melancholics are horrible. And we played a trick on them because we made melancholics the most fashionable biotype in the last 50 years. So when a melancholic guy that looks hot looks like a melancholic woman that looks hot, they go like, well, you're the typical image of being attractive, so I guess I like you. And then it becomes the most inert. Do you have that word?
Yeah, yeah. Inert's good.
Like not alive. Like it becomes the most inert relationship ever because they sit with each other and they're both thinking about what to say and what would happen if they actually say it and no one says anything. And then the other one starts making stories in their head about why you're not saying something and that's why I'm not saying something either. And then they actually end up breaking up 2 years after they should have.
Right.
Yes.
They just lose a year or two.
I have friends, some of my best friends are melancholic guys, and we finally talk about what's making us mad, and it's always shit that we've been holding for years. Yeah. That's all coming out in one conversation, and it is such a mess when it happens.
Wait, so back to that's exactly the phlegmatic men thing, because...
Back
to me and the people I should date.
We talked about it, and you've said phlegmatic fake fire, right?
Yeah.
But I like phlegmatic. I like just straight phlegmatics. Like that's the thing that I feel so drawn to.
Yes, but we've been working with you for a while now, my friend, for you to become the powerful, fiery phlegmatic.
Yeah.
And before, you probably felt really attracted to phlegmatic fake fires, even though they're awful, most of them. But as you... I married one. I married a balanced one. Like we actually did some work that like the thing that made me fall in love with my wife, she's a phlegmatic fake fire. So she's deeply emotional, but she denied it for the longest time. So she's an engineer and she was into finance and she works in the stock market and she would bark at people in the Mexican stock market and things like that. But when we started being together, she started going back into her phlegmatic. I started pushing her back into her phlegmatic. And now she takes care of me in a way that I didn't know existed. I didn't know women like that existed. Like someone who could be such a powerhouse on the street and such a beautiful nurturing housewife at home. Yeah. And it's beautiful, but she has opened up to me about certain things. And she just told me this last night. She said, I knew I had to quit my job if I wanted to marry you. Mm. And I said, why? And she made a lot of money, like in a couple of months in her relationship, she actually made more money than me. And it was funny because she said, I knew I had to quit my job. And I said, I never cared about how much you were making. And she said, no, but I created a career that asked me to use this mask of aggression and not feeling. And that's not the woman you wanted to marry. And that's not the woman I want to be in my relationship.
Wow. See, that right there is a big thing that I see like in American women is they've developed a career around a mask that won't allow them to be in the relationships that they desire.
Yes.
And this is such a big thing. And I have a hard time saying it because I don't want it to come across as misogynistic or anti-feminist or any of that stuff. But I'm like, I find that a lot of women have made their careers in their masculine. Yeah. And like kind of in that, or the phlegmatic fake fire, whatever you want to call it, but in that more like assertive balls to the walls, hustle grind mentality. But like if you bring that back home, like there's no room for the polarity to exist between the masculine of your, I mean, and I'm talking in a heteronormative relationship. Watch me cover my tracks now.
Yeah, totally.
Ross is canceled.
But like that whole idea of like, it, like you either have to drop the mask. Let me ask you this as a question. Is it possible for someone to like live their life and their career in one way in that bliss mask and be able to drop it when they come back home? Or is it something where they actually get to return to their center or their core and just acknowledge that what they truly want in their life, and maybe that the career was just something that they were trying to, boy, am I getting off track here? They were trying to help me here.
No,
Megan.
I'm listening because this is exactly me.
Yeah.
You're describing me.
So it's like I've wanted something my whole life. And I either thought that I couldn't get it from a partner, so I went out and I got it myself.
Yeah.
And I said, I will have my own career so I don't need a man, or I will have my own career so I don't need anybody. I will have my own career so I can provide for myself everything that I was never given externally. And then in doing that, there's this like independent, self-sustaining nature, which like if you study masculine and feminine energies, it's actually called level 2 feminine. It's the Beyonce, like independent woman element. But the third level of that is like this open vulnerability, like tenderness that is the feminine energy at its purest, which would actually allow for that, the core of oneself, the wound that was created, that created the drive, that created the hustle mentality, that's the thing that their heart, soul, identity truly wants.
Yes.
And to be able to return to that. And like what your wife did was saying, it's almost like a MacGuffin in a script. You get the thing that you wanted and you go, oh, this didn't fulfill me. But what you really wanted was back home all along. So you return to home, you return to your natural way of being, and you're able to kind of assume the relationship, you know, like play the role that is in alignment with your soul, with your core.
Yeah. So is the question how to get there, or is the question is that possible?
I don't know if there was a question. I think I just ranted. Was there a question?
I was just working
through something. Are you right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like halfway through it, I was like, where am I going with this?
No, but I feel exactly that way. I'm very interested in what you have to say about that, because that's how I feel. Like, I feel like I had created this world because I wasn't given anything. I was born out of scarcity, and now I've created abundance, but then I want to be taken care of, but I can take care of myself better than any guy has been able to show me. So that's why I've been single
Thanks.
For years.
any guy,
I know.
Well, yeah, you're right.
So Rodrigo said something actually on his live the other day. He was working with a sanguine woman, and she was like, what should I do? Actually, you know what? We have him here. I don't need to reiterate what he says.
I've done so many lives that I have no idea which one you're talking
about. This is the sanguine woman. And she was like, I want to be with a man's man. And he goes, no, you actually want a skinny phlegmatic. Like a skinny phlegmatic would be good for you.
Oh, yes.
Because like, but yeah.
That I just want to answer the rant question that you made, especially because it actually ties back to something Megan asked that we didn't answer, which is how do we solve this? So okay, we got it. How do we solve this? This is the beauty about human beings. Every time we want to fix something, we believe that it's about a practice. So it's about give me a formula because then I'll practice it and I'll fix it. But the truth is that the only way to solve the human psyche is in the same way you built it, which is subconsciously by creating awareness in that subconscious process. Because that's how it was born. That's how it was created. So both in Unani medicine and in systemic psychology, they say what you don't pay attention to, like what you don't uncover, gets sick and kills. What you start uncovering and paying attention to starts healing itself just by the attention given. So it's not about a new practice. It's about realizing stuff and carrying on paying attention to that. So in the case of my wife, I remember the day that we were dating and we had just moved in together. We had been together like for a year or two, and we moved in together because of the earthquake. Not the one today, but the one 2 years ago. The apartment where she lived, that building was totaled. So I picked her up and I took her to my apartment. It was a good excuse to move in together.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we moved in together, she started being so protective of me. And I remember at some point I sat down with her and I started crying and I said, I didn't know women like you existed. I didn't know that women that take care of their men like this existed and that could be so feisty and powerful out there and so nurturing and creating a home inside the house. And she looked at me and she said, well, I didn't know I could be like this either. Like, I didn't know this existed inside of me. But the way you've been pushing me and protecting me just allows me to go back into this way of being. And I know that I could be like that with her because I almost died because of my positive mask. Like I'm legally disabled. Half of my spine is made of titanium and I shouldn't be able to walk. And I ended up there because of my positive mask, because I thought I was a coach 24/7 and because everybody expected my wisdom and that was everything that was available from me. So I became someone who had the answers for every question for everyone, but who was not paying attention to himself at all.
Right.
So by the time I realized I had a back pain was because four of my discs had exploded already. And they had to rebuild my whole spine. And I know I didn't recover from that until I realized how I got there. And I got there through my positive mask. So paying attention to that started shifting my life experience. I didn't practice anything. Just I wouldn't allow my positive mask to take over at dinner parties and at meetings. And when I was meeting a client, and like I could learn, and this is for what you were saying, Russ, I could learn how to switch it on and off when the mask became like ability that I had and not my identity.
Ah, yeah, it's like in your toolbox instead of the,
exactly.
the toolbox itself.
It's a tool. It's not who I am.
You won't lose.
And I started discovering many other things that existed in me.
Yeah, like for example, like I feel like my bliss mask was the comedian, like always making a joke. And then in going through the MITT experience, like my pendulum kind of swung to the other direction at first, but then I was like, you know, when I was starting to integrate all this stuff, I was like, I can always put on the comedy hat, mm-hmm. but I don't need to live in it.
Totally.
And that was like the cool thing. I'm like, I've been spending my life working out my upper body. I can focus on building my legs a little bit. And I'm like, I still got the upper body strength, you know, like Justin Bieber has been working out since he was 17. So he can have that body.
Yeah,
and
sure,
I can't,
sure,
but
sure.
You are stuck on this.
I'm just like, if I would have known at 17, I would have made different choices maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to balance no matter what. So if they're like, you working out your arms and then your legs, it's like we can work on our bliss mask, which we have been for so long, and now we can drop it and be vulnerable, and that's when we can start connecting. Because until we do that, we're just showing, it's like a show and tell of our masks. And that's not living. That's just a bad show. It's
definitely not connecting.
Bad long show.
Yeah.
that's just a really long act.
Yeah. And some people die wearing their masks. I mean, like, not even young. Some people hold on to it for like dear freaking life until their dying day. And like, you know, you talked about this in your Falling in Love workshop about how like level two relationships are so level one is biotypes, level two is the stories and trauma. And then level three is freedom. Most people can stay in that level two relationship for 50 years,
right?
You know, same thing with these bliss masks, and you can wear them for 50 years. And I was about to say comfortably, but not comfortably. But you can do it because it feels like identity.
Yes,
that's the thing. Like, if people won't like go to a beast, it literally feels like life or death. If right. I let go,
and then we see the crisis that they go through when their mask doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if your mask was amazing, by the time you're 60. The world has changed. Your mask doesn't apply anymore. Not with like a bunch of people. And then we can see the arrogance and the anger that gets replaced, that gets in the space where the mask was, because people don't like me because of my mask. So now the world owes me something and I hate the world and they're against me and they're doing this to me. And this is how people are reacting. This is actually how people are making their political decisions.
Mm,
yeah. My mask doesn't work anymore. It's not giving me the feedback that I wanted. So I need to blame someone.
Yeah.
Well, that's like Louis C.K.
Exactly.
Like he kind of came back and he's like, what are you going to do? Take my birthday away? Like, but he's just like so, which is such a funny joke. but like Chris D'Elia is another one that's going through. I think a lot of these comedians that are kind of like getting busted, like they all, you and I, Brian, have talked about this. Like, we can't hang out with comedians. Because it's just like, it's now I use the term bliss mask and you could use it too, but like it's bliss mask all the time.
Yeah.
I have a hard time and I work with comedians exclusively.
Yeah.
I have a very difficult time sometimes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
A minute of silence for the bliss masks of the comedians.
Yeah. Let them fall. Let them fall.
I'm just like, it's because I'm just thinking of everyone in life who we're just walking around showing our bliss masks forward. Do we have any real relationships except for the people that are doing the work to take their masks off every now and then? How many people do we meet that we've never really seen before? You know?
I do feel that like the people that you love, like your best friends, are often the ones where you're like, I just feel like I can be myself around. Like there are certain people where like you feel so comfortable taking it off, or at least showing more than what you normally do. And those people are great. You guys feel like that to me.
No.
You guys definitely feel like that.
Took us a while to get there.
Oh yeah, right.
I want to get there too with you.
Yeah. Do you have any more questions? Any other final questions?
Something that's really, really sad about this is that you're right about something, Brian, which is most people have a few friends that they go like, I feel like I can be myself around you. But those, the people that they say that to are usually people that know them from so far back that they saw them do ridiculous stuff and they saw them trying different masks and finding the mask that they were going to wear. So they won't buy into their act as everyone else. But then that doesn't count as an authentic relationship. It's just someone that your trick doesn't apply to.
It's like when you go back for high school reunions and it's like you just go right back into what you are. And if you've developed a new personality, everyone's like, what the fuck is this?
See, immediately. I was thinking about it from the other side. Where people are like, you've changed, man. Hollywood's changed you. No, you just got a different bliss mask.
Totally.
Like, that's it. And they're like, shut the fuck up, Hollywood, you know? Like, that's so fascinating.
You're doing an impression of a bully.
But at the same time, you guys pretty much are like in the mecca of fake masks.
Yeah.
Of like egos and tonic mask. It's funny.
Oh, and on like the West Side with like the enlightened, the spiritual bypassers. Like,
oh, some they have their own too. They just don't get paid for their masks. in your state, they do.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Their mask is an accessory in the East Coast. And this is how we see it from outside the US, just for you guys to know. In the East Coast, their mask is something that they cherish and feel like they've earned because of their ability to do something. In the West Coast, is about the mask itself.
Wait, could you go into that a little bit deeper? And also, how about Hawaii?
I mean, we got to talk to our Hawaii family.
We love Hawaii.
Yeah.
Hawaii is perfect. What are you talking about? You're welcome.
Yeah.
No, I mean, if you want me to go deeper into that, is for example, in New York, there's the typical mask, and we have movies about this. There's the typical mask of the stockbroker that made it and is like really wealthy. And we know that mask. But you don't get paid for the mask. People actually are willing to take your mask because you're so successful at what you do. And you're driving a Lamborghini and you have three stories of this building for your offices. And then the mask comes with it. But they won't give him a reality show. Well, now lately they're willing to.
Sure.
But his mask is not what's getting him paid. But in the West Coast, you see a lot of people getting paid just because we enjoy watching their mask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That seems detrimental.
Does that make sense?
Megan and I have had a lot of conversations about this because we both started our careers on the internet,
right,
on YouTube and Instagram and all that stuff. And it's like, I think that's where it is the most right now. I mean, when you become a personality or a presence, it's basically just your mask. Like,
yes,
truly, it's just you just like doing little snippets of you doing your character, whatever that is. And it's a pretty toxic place. Like, I've really felt uncomfortable there.
I've spent so many of my therapy sessions being like, I don't feel authentic because what works online is not how I always feel. And so whenever the camera turns on, I had a boyfriend once tell me he didn't feel like my boyfriend until the camera was rolling. And that wrecked me.
Yeah. Well, he was dating your mask.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's rough, but it's true.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why I think I never like really caught on independently. Like my growth was really from SourceFed, and I was like, I joined a machine that was already in motion, but I was never able to do like the stuff individually. And I have no idea why. If it was like, I was like, I can't fully dive into this mask anymore. Or if my mask got so shattered from like what happened with me at SourceFed, because that was a real pivotal point. Like in my career and life, like when I got fired from SourceFed and like went off to be like, oh, am I good at this anymore? All of a sudden, like that bliss mask that I was being rewarded for, that same mask was so entirely rejected in a way that felt so painful that I wonder if I threw out that mask, because that's right around the time that I got really involved in the personal development stuff. Like I started to be like, who the hell am I and how am I going to be happy?
There's one thing about YouTube stars and social media stars that I feel for. And I mean, I was a minor YouTube star in Mexico like 8 years ago. I was one of the first YouTubers and I was one of the first people that they made partners and they paid me for my videos and all that. And I hated it. But one of the reasons I hated it was because I realized something. When I was a kid, I was on the Mickey Mouse Club Mexico, so I know how TV shows work.
Yeah.
When they kick you off a show, like they kicked me out because I was way taller than the older people in the show and it made no sense. So they kicked me out. But when they kicked me out there, I could blame the producer. I could blame the director. I could blame the network. But when you become famous through social media, you have no one to blame when you're not succeeding, and all you get, like you can't put a face in it, is just like world rejection. And what they go through is horrible because they have no one to blame. And it's just like, I guess people loved me and now they hate me.
Right.
And going emotionally through that is horrible. And I feel for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is I feel like now that anyone can be on Instagram and anyone can get like famous in a second, it almost feels like it's happening to not even just performers. Like you just get on Instagram, you don't have that many followers. You try to play a song or you try to do something. No one's following you. It's like, you can have this thing in your head where you're like, I'm not I'm not liked. My count is not as high as that person's. And it's just like, if you didn't have Instagram, you wouldn't have that feeling at all. You'd have your friends in, but because you are seeing that 7 billion people aren't watching you, then you can like go in your head about why they aren't.
Only a melancholic could have come up with that way of explaining it. And it was brilliant. We're not paying attention to how many people are watching. We're paying attention to how many out of the 7 billion are not.
All possible options that there could be.
And there's one thing, I'm circling back to biotypes, but there's one really interesting thing that I think we left on the table.
Yeah.
The United States is one of the only countries in the world, and I've only been to two, and I've worked all over the world. I've only been to two places in the world where it's not women complaining to men that they're assholes, but it's women crying, saying, I'm sorry to men, and men crying, saying, I would have given you my life. I would have done anything for you. And women just crying, saying, I'm sorry, I was such a bitch to you. I used you.
You're talking about on the other side of their transformation, right?
Of course, of course. So I mean, when I work with people, I work with them at the very first level. Like they haven't taken anything. They're just walking in the room. And when I start working and processing in pretty much every country I've worked in, it's women complaining about men. In the States, it's men crying towards women saying, "Why won't you love me back? Why didn't you choose me?"
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
You're welcome, my friend. That one was for you.
So actually we skipped over something that this is maybe like the perfect time to come back to it, which is how could a sanguine and a melancholic work? We talked about
how they don't work.
About how they don't work, and also specifically what happened between these two when they fell apart. But
fell apart.
Broke, literally shattered.
We're closer now than we ever were.
I agree.
Great. Cool. So we put the vase
that
back.
Speaks, that speaks very, very badly of your relationship.
Yeah, I guess so.
Are you kidding? Oh, no. Badly of their romantic relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yes.
I mean, that speaks horrible about their romantic relationship you used to have. If this is being more intimate and close.
Right.
Yeah, well, COVID. So that's why we're so insane. So.
That's why we're all here.
Yeah.
So how could...
sanguine and a melancholy.
Let's stick with just sanguine and melancholy because like my brain wants to know all of them. I don't know if we have the time or energy to go through all of them, but let's just say with the sanguine and the melancholic, if there are people out there that are in that kind of a relationship, what could they do to make it work?
So the first thing it would be understand. This is what I explained in my falling in love workshop, but it's the first thing is understanding that most people fall in love purely from genetic biotype. And when we see someone that compensates who we are so good, we fall for them because it feels like you complete me. You're my better half. You're the one that compensates everything that I don't know how to do and how to deal with. Then understanding that we fall in love like that and that won't last, and we actually end up hurting each other by doing that. Then if you're already in a relationship when one of you is a headsy melancholic and the other one is a fun, charismatic sanguine, and none is better than the other. I'm sorry if it sounded that way. But if you're in a relationship like that, the second thing you need to realize is you're going to fall out of love for the same reasons that you fell in love with this person for. And then you're going to fall into the second category of falling in love, which is you'll only stick together if your trauma is compatible. Which is, for example, if I feel like I'm not worthy because I feel like my mom didn't love me, so I don't feel like I'm worth a lot, and I don't think that people will fall for me. And then if someone actually falls for me, I won't allow it because I don't think I'm worth that much, so you must be playing with me. Like, you must be toying with me somehow. I won't allow it. But then if someone starts treating me like I'm worthy but not that much, and I'm cool but I'm kind of stupid too, I'll fall for them. Because then that person will validate my self-image, the story that I have about myself. And then if that person has a story about men abandoning them, then we're a match made in heaven. Trauma will just make us stick together for the rest of our lives because I can use her to feel unworthy and she can use me to see me as weak and not someone that's reliable and that could abandon her at any minute. And this is the type of relationships that actually stick together for the rest of their lives. So it doesn't matter how you fell in love with this person, if it's out of biotype or out of trauma. It's about understanding the intimacy underneath all of that and creating a relationship from there, because that's what can make a lasting, beautiful relationship. On like putting the trauma on the table and saying, I fell in love with you because of your biotype and my biotype, and we actually stuck together because I'm making you feel like I will abandon you and you're making me feel like I'm worthless. And that our egos love that. And if we actually want to have a healthy relationship, these are my fears. This is who I am, and I want to know who you are. And then when you're choosing from there, you're from absolute freedom starting to create a new relationship, even when you've been in it for years. That's what makes them work.
Wow. And how many couples actually go through that, you know?
Very few.
Right.
I'm so curious to hear what your audience is like going through, because I think I am of the belief that just by listening to conversations like this, healing begins to happen.
Absolutely.
I want to know the results. Like, I want your audience to like reach out or like post on a message board or something.
Definitely.
Like, can they tell us somewhere? Will you tell us if they reach out to you?
Yeah, we'll do like a little follow-up. If any of this is resonating with anyone, which should resonate with literally every person, because we're all of the biotypes we've talked about.
Especially in Hawaii. Yeah.
Shout out Hawaii. Thank you for
making... They don't need help. They're doing great.
Thank you for making this the number one podcast. We love you forever.
Hawaii is Mahalo. My Mecca, though. Like, it's like Maui is my happy place. I'm going to move there one day. It's just...
I've never been. We should go together.
Can we?
Oh my, please.
A live podcast in Hawaii?
Yes.
Yes.
Please. Beside. Oh my gosh.
All right, calling Hawaii now, right, yeah. Mr. Hawaii?
Set a date.
Which island, though?
Well, Maui, right. Obviously.
Yes.
Yeah. Reach out, though. We've got it. We have the phone number. I'll link at the end of the episode, but justatipshow@gmail.com. Tell us what you think. I usually have callers call in, so we can also take a call maybe next time. That would be very cool and like really dive deep.
Oh, I would love that, because usually I can tell people's biotype even by their voice.
What?
Is it too late?
I did it. I was on national radio in Mexico for a year, and like every Monday morning, and people loved it because they called in, and just by the first phrases that they used and the problem they were trying to fix, I would go like, and please get a diet because you're getting heavy. And people would go like, oh yeah, that's true.
Row,
because they were telling me all phlegmatic problems. So
can we do a call-in show with you? Are you
sure,
open?
Yeah.
That would be so fun. I have one final question. This is like, I think maybe some people might be feeling like they are multiple biotypes. And so my specific question is, a lot of people that listen to the podcast or follow me understand me as an introvert, but as a sanguine, I am a fun loving kind of do it all person, which everybody knows I'm a type A do it aller. But where does it become unaligned that I don't see myself as an extrovert, but I am one as a sanguine?
Because you're a supporting sanguine, and that means that you're 100% a sanguine, but with some mommy and daddy issues that kind of dealt with your inner and outer confidence. So that's why from the comfort of your own home, on your couch with your microphone, we can actually see your sanguineness, because you're not protecting yourself from anyone. And the only way we could see you like that in life is if you dealt with all of the childhood things.
Right. And speaking in full circle to what Brian was saying, feeling liberated as you're accepting your biotype. I think when I was in basic with you, I was like, I want to be more extroverted. I want to be the funny one. I want to be all this stuff. But it's like, oh, I already am that inherently. If I just do all the work to clean out all the cobwebs of the no mom, no dad, then I can be what I am inside already.
Yeah, because the problem is we can all be a certain way in a very safe space.
Right.
Mm.
But it's about being that everywhere. We again, with my sayings, in Mexico we say, el que es perico donde quieres verde, which means who's a parrot, wherever you put them, they're still green. So it's being who you are wherever you are. Yeah. I love this Mexican saying.
Yeah, they're great. They're poetic. And also, you said verde, which made me think chili verde, and now I want tacos.
Let's go get tacos.
I'm so hungry.
No, don't go get tacos with Ross. He eats vegan tacos. Those are not tacos.
We all do.
That's disrespectful to tacos. You guys,
I have a sensitive, melancholic stomach, so I need to actually.
I could eat anything because I'm a sanguine, but I will eat a vegan taco.
And whatever I eat will make me fat. So it's just like
if you smell.
winning.
That's a quick wrap up of biotype.
What was that, Ro? What'd you say?
If you smell bread, you get fat.
If I smell bread.
Phlegmatics are like that. It's horrible.
That was like the everyone on SourceFed had their defining trait. Mine was like gluten-free. And I was like, fuck this.
That's but your trait.
It's true. They're like, oh yeah, we've got personalities. Like Elliot's the smart one. Lee's the goofy one. Joe's the leader. And Ross can't have bread. And I'm like, Jesus.
But you get to be the comedian in that one.
Yeah, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
This has been incredible. Thank you so much.
Wild. Yes. This is awesome, Rodrigo.
I got to shout
you guys.
Out your,
I really enjoyed it.
Your Facebook and your Instagram.
Please.
The
people
Instagram is
follow.
At RGP, Redison Rodrigo Garcia Platas Development. And then on Facebook, you are facebook.com/RGP English. Because they could find you. And if there's any Spanish speakers, he's native in Spanish as well. And then you've got the Biotypes workshop for anybody that wants to do like a full on immersive 2-day event, learning this thing like the back of their hand, being able to relate to
anybody
others.
Everybody wants to walk around and know how people are just by looking at them and surprise people at dinner parties and at bars and use it at their workplace, create powerful teams and actually be able to sell anything to anyone and knowing how to speak to them. See you on June 18th and 19th
July.
In the Biotype workshop.
July, yeah. Otherwise,
July 18th and 19th.
Yeah. And the link to that is in your Instagram bio?
Yes. If they go to my Instagram at RGP Development, there's a link there where they can register and they can get all the information. And then they're on Instagram and maybe they can pop into one of my lives and I'll tell them a little bit about who they are.
Do that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I implore you to join the live. They are so fun to watch. And even if you're not the one being worked with, you can take so much from it.
It's my favorite TV show because you watch the couples I'm like, this is better than reality TV. Screw this fake stuff with like the Real Housewives. Like I want to see this stuff.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Do you know what's funny? That people are watching reality shows and going like, oh, that's real when it's all acted. And then when we have people going in my lives or in my trainings and I start working with them, especially the very first ones, people go like, oh, that's a plant. That's
I thought many were plants. And then it's you could not write this.
No.
Have you ever had to tell a choleric they're a choleric? And if so, how do they respond?
Oh, do you know where it's beautiful? In Mexico, because Mexico is a country of the phlegmatics. We're all emotions. That's why we're so family oriented and everything is about food with your mom and all of that. And there's very few cholerics here, but every time I have a choleric in the room and they grab the microphone, I go like, oh, your life must be tough here. And they go like, why? And I tell them, because you're a tiger living in the country of teddy bears. So all people must think all the time that you're angry and that you offended them and that you hurt them. And you can just say hi and people feel like you punch them in the face. And half of them start crying right away.
Wow.
They go like, no one understands me. And this is so hard.
Wow.
Wow.
So how do you deal? We have so many more questions.
Maybe we'll definitely have to do.
Yeah, we got to do another.
Let's do a follow-up because I have a workshop in an hour.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much for your time. I hope everyone listening has gotten really good gems out of this. And this is the beginning. If this is the first time you're ever hearing about biotypes, do a deep dive and follow him because there's so much more to come. This has been an honor. Thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I love this. I love having this transformational conversation, speaking truths. I love
it. It's awesome. Thanks, Rodrigo.
Yay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I'm sure so many people have never heard about biotypes before. And if you are as obsessed as Ross, Brian, and I now are about them, call us at 805-751-9071. If we get a really good question, we could probably do a follow-up round with Rodrigo. And if you have a different question, still call us, 805-751-9071. I like that I say us. It is, I guess, me and someone else, so it is a collective person. But call us, give us your age. We can help you through any sticky situation that we can to the best of our ability. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Definitely give Rodrigo a check out. There's so much to learn. And we'll see you next time on Just a Tip. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.